All over the world, the left is protesting for peace. This time around, they're doing it without Paul Berman. Berman is a long-standing man of the left and a political and cultural critic. He's written for The New Republic and The New York Times Magazine. He's also the author of a new book called Terror and Liberalism. Berman supports the war in Iraq because, he says, the values of liberal democracy are at stake. As Berman sees it, Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda are modern expressions of the same totalitarian fervor that spawned fascists like Hitler, Mussolini, and Stalin. Berman told Steve Paulson that most of the justifications given for the current war aren't the most important ones.
I think it's a war about ideas. I don't think it's a war about weapons of mass destruction per se, because as we have reason to know, we're under threat by people with box cutters as well as weapons of mass destruction. And it's not a war about oil or material interests or this kind of thing. Saddam Hussein would be happy to sell us his oil if we would buy it. It's really a war. It's a war in the pattern of all of the principal wars of the last 60 years or so, which are wars of liberal society against totalitarian movements.
So you're saying that Islamic fundamentalism is actually a stepchild of those earlier movements of fascism and communism?
Yes. In 1922, Mussolini marched on Rome. He put his men into what he called legions, and he marched on Rome with the idea of recreating the Roman Empire of ancient times in a modern version that was going to create a shining, spectacular new society for all man by recreating the ancient Rome. And what this new ancient Rome was going to do was provide a solid, unshakable granite society without any separation of spheres or differences within it. Totalitarianism was actually Mussolini's word. That was 1922. In 1928, the Islamist movement, the modern political Islamic fundamentalist movement, that movement was formed in Egypt. It was created in the form of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And the ideals of the Muslim Brotherhood were to organize themselves into what they called phalanxes, that the phalanxes were going to recreate the ancient caliphate of the 7th century, which had followed Muhammad, which was going to create a perfect society for the future, unshakable, a granite society with no differences within it, no spheres of separate powers, nothing like that. In other words, the dream of the Islamists beginning in the 1920s in Egypt was pretty much the same as the dream of the fascists in Italy in the 1920s.
And what you're saying is that there's a utopian vision at the core of this, but it's kind of a black and white vision. I mean, there are the chosen ones who have this vision for, in this case, sort of an Islamic paradise on earth, but everyone else, the infidels, are the enemy.
Well, that was true of fascism too. It's a pathological utopian vision. It's a utopian vision which finally can't be achieved in ordinary mundane life, but can be achieved only in the field of the dead. And this was the experience of the fascist movements in Europe, which slaughtered millions and millions. And it has been the experience that we've seen with Islamism. And I would throw in, by the way, that the Ba'athist regime of Iraq, of Saddam Hussein, is another version, a slightly different version of the same fascist inspiration. The Ba'athist movement arose out of currents from the 1920s and 30s, which is to say, from the same years in which so many Europeans were turning to fascism. The Ba'athist movement arose in those periods, organized formally in 1943 in Damascus, and came to power in a dictatorial form in Iraq in 1968. And the Ba'athist movement has likewise killed hundreds of thousands, perhaps a million people in Iraq. But the general, that is to say, the deepest inspiration of all of these movements is, in my interpretation, the same. You can trace even some deep mythological elements that each of these movements share. There's always the same charismatic leader at the top, the praetorian guard, the police state, the neighborhood committees, the neighbor spying on neighbor, and finally the result of masses and masses of people being killed. All of this in the name of an apocalyptic and paranoid ideology, usually with the same set of enemies.
Now, one thing that's puzzling to a lot of people in the West and frustrating is why this vision that you've described is so compelling. to so many people in the Arab and Muslim worlds. I mean, certainly not to everyone, and there's a debate about how much popularity someone like Saddam Hussein has. But why there haven't been more liberal Muslims who advocate a secular society or at least separation of church and state, why those people don't speak out more forcefully? How do you explain that?
First of all, we ought to give these movements a certain respect in this way. We shouldn't assume that these movements are intellectually feeble or inconsequential. Let us remind ourselves that in Europe, some of the greatest brains of Europe were fascists. Many people would agree that the single greatest philosopher of the 20th century was Martin Heidegger, the German. He was a Nazi. So when Europe went fascist, it was because, in large part, some of the greatest brains, the greatest institutions of Europe, the most intelligent, brightest people, they went fascist.
But what you're saying then about the current state of affairs in the Islamic world is there is a real war of ideas going on, and it's not clear who's going to win. And it's not clear that the ideas of liberal democracy will triumph.
One thing that's definitely clear is that we in the United States are putting up an extremely feeble fight in the battle of ideas. And here, I think that President Bush has been an absolute disaster on this front, that in the first few days after 9/11, on September 20, 2001, he gave a speech to Congress, and he promised in it that the United States was going to fight a war of ideas. And he was right to make that promise. And it was necessary to make that promise because, as I say, the appeal of these movements is intellectual. Many brilliant people are articulating the doctrines of the sundry wings of the totalitarian movement in the Muslim world, and they have to be argued against point by point. You can't expect that bombs by themselves aren't going to convince millions of people to abandon their ideas and take up a new set of ideas. Bush himself has done a pretty bad job of expounding what are the values of liberal society. There's been no effort to mobilize writers and thinkers in the United States and the Western world. It's as if Bush has unilaterally disarmed in the realm of ideas.
Well, this kind of puts you in a funny position, though, because you're supporting this war against Saddam Hussein. You want to see him overthrown, and you are, in essence, supporting the Bush administration's policy here. But you're very critical of the president himself and his administration.
Well, I don't think I'm supporting their policy. I'm absolutely supporting the overthrow of Saddam Hussein, which is something to be fervently desired by all people on behalf of the Iraqis, on behalf of the region, and on behalf of ourselves. And if Bush is going to overthrow him, good. But I think that Bush has all along done a very, very poor job of preparing the country and the world and the Muslim world for this struggle.
I want to talk about the domestic politics in all of this in America, because it's really quite interesting. I mean, you are a man of the left, right?
I am.
And yet you're definitely in the minority on the left here in your support of the war. What do you think most people on the left don't understand about this war?
I think that most people on the left have fallen into two kinds of traps. Many people on the left, and I mean the left in the broadest way, left of center, look at Bush and feel a kind of personal revulsion or loathing at his manner, at his uncultured air, at his snarling personality, this kind of thing. I can say that I myself respond that way to him. I realize that other people admire him and like him and feel inspired by him, and that's fine for them, but I don't share those feelings at all. So one trap that I think that people on the left have fallen into is thinking that just because they feel an extreme dislike for Bush personally, and because they feel a justified extreme dislike for the domestic policies that he's followed, they conclude, therefore, that everything that he does must be wrong, and the basic thrust of his foreign policy is to be doubted and must be wrong.
What do you see as the other trap that the left has fallen into?
The other trap is a larger philosophical one, and it's a belief which goes throughout liberal society. It's a belief that pathological movements, that movements for mass death cannot exist. It's a belief that everybody all over the world must at some level be reasonable. Therefore, If terrorists are attacking us, if masses of people are being killed, there must be some good logical explanation for this, and therefore they imagine that if there are suicide terror movements in the Arab world, it's for some good and rational reason, and that if we in the United States can somehow correct our behavior, these people aren't going to attack us.
But what infuriates so many people on the left right now about this war against Saddam Hussein, I mean, beyond just the carnage, all the people who will die, is yes. what seems to be incredible American arrogance. I mean, essentially thumbing our nose at the rest of the world because there is so little international support for this, and invading a sovereign country, no matter how corrupt and evil, just marching in with a preemptive strike. For a lot of people, that seems just deeply wrong.
Well, I think that Bush has presented the whole campaign in a way that arouses the opposition of a lot of people for very good reasons. But I would say, first of all, that the invasion of a sovereign country is something to be avoided in almost all cases, but not in all cases. That in the case of Saddam Hussein, this is a fascist or fascist-style regime which has killed hundreds of thousands of people, maybe a million people, which really is working on these arms, which is connected ideologically to the larger totalitarian movement that threatens us. And it's a great mistake to look on a government like that as legitimate.
But couldn't you make that same argument for the reason why we should go to war against North Korea or perhaps against Iran, perhaps Syria? There are lots of countries out there that don't look very nice.
Yes. Well, I do think that the countries you've mentioned are quite scary. And I do think that we would be foolish in the extreme to think that we're not in great danger from these countries. I think that all liberal-minded people, certainly all people on the left, should be able to look at these countries and ask themselves, why are we on the left? Those of us who are on the left, aren't we the enemies of tyranny? Aren't we especially the enemies of absolute tyranny when some people have been reduced to a life of complete oppression, when they've been reduced to famine, when they've been reduced to complete dependence on some miserable demagogic tyrant with his miserable demagogic fascistic ideology? Aren't we, the people on the left, the greatest enemies of all of this kind of tyrant? I mean, isn't that the whole reason to be on the left?
Paul Berman is a political and cultural critic. His new book is called Terror and Liberalism. Steve Paulson spoke with him.